We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey there. We at Blue Wire just wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this podcast. We know everything outside is pretty scary and uncertain, but we're committed to helping you get through your day by talking about the sports and teams that you love most. If you're looking for more great podcasts to distract you, check out BlueWirePods.com. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the podcast and stay safe.
Hey there. Welcome to the Eurostep, a Milwaukee Bucks podcast and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. This episode is sponsored by betonline.ag, and it's a special one. My co-host, as always, Rohan Kadi, and I are joined today by former Milwaukee Buck, Johnny O'Brien. We are very excited to be joined by J.O.B. Johnny, how's it going?
It's going great. It's going great, man. Can't complain. Staying safe, staying healthy, washing my hands. So.
Yeah. How are you handling this? How are you handling this time? How are you keeping yourself busy?
I think for the most part, my kids, man, are keeping me busy. You know, they're not in school and they're at home. So they're, you know, I have to keep, me and my wife have to, try to keep new ways to invent new ways to really just keep them busy. You know, we're running out of ideas. So it's been pretty interesting.
No, definitely. I was actually just talking to my buddy Emil. We were talking about, you know, I feel like the pro basketball players that we know and we cover must be the most bored of all. That I was saying this because, I mean, you're so used to doing so many different things and traveling all over the world and playing and practicing and everything else. And he came back at me right away with, well, I feel like the guys with kids probably have their hands pretty full. And I was like, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, for sure. You know, unless you got like a, you know, huge LA home like LeBron with a gym and a fitness center, I'm sure you're probably, you know, staying busy.
Absolutely. So I just want to hop into it here. I know, I mean, there's all sorts of things that we can and will talk to you about, but this being a Bucks podcast, I want to start there. You know, after 3 solid years at LSU, you know, putting up numbers, you declared for the 2014 NBA draft and got picked by the Bucks 36th overall. So very early in the second round, you know, flashback to that moment. What was your reaction to getting picked by the Bucks, and were you surprised with where you went in that draft?
You know what? I had a really, it's interesting. So I had a really short workout for Milwaukee. I think they had Andrew Wiggins there earlier, and his time like went over. And so I just remember our workout that was supposed to be around an hour and 30. It only went for 30 minutes because everybody had to get back to the airport. So after the workout, I just remember John Hammond telling me, he was like, hey, if you're available, we're going to draft you. And, you know, I was slated to go anywhere between like late first round and early second round. So I didn't really know where I would fall. And sure enough, man, they kept their word and they drafted me at the 36. So.
I think it ended up being like, you know, a fun team for that. And like, you know, that little era of the Milwaukee Bucks, like your rookie year, especially, you know, Brandon Knight started leading the team and ended up making a playoffs. That team is fondly remembered by Bucks fans today. It's sort of like it was the team that sort of jump-started this new era of Bucks basketball. Just like looking back at that year, what do you remember specifically about that group and that playoff run?
I just remember as a rookie, man, having some really, really good vets. I think that, you know, if you go look at that group, I think that all the veterans that we had, I think they've had really solid careers. You know, you look at Ersan, you look at Zaza, you look at Jared Dudley, who's still in the league, you know, being a locker room guy for the Lakers. You look at Jared Bayless, who was really helpful. OJ, who was, you know, really helpful at the time. What else do we have? We just had a good group of vets, and I think that, you know, you combine that with Brandon Knight, who was really playing well. I just think it was, you know, really good start to the season. I think that start to the season kind of helped us after we made the trade, because, you know, we had to really start over and build team chemistry, and I think that early season start helped us make the playoffs that year.
So this is a perfect topic for me. I mean, when I first really got into, you know, watching and then covering the Bucks, that was, you know, that season, the Brandon Knight season, and I absolutely fell in love with Brandon Knight's game. And I remember that trade. I thought the deadline was over, and then the trade comes through, and I was just crushed. I mean, Michael Carter Williams at the time, he headlined the return, and he was, you know, super intriguing. I mean, he starts off his first game, I think he had like a triple double or nearly that against the Heatles. So he was like intriguing. It didn't seem terrible right away, but I thought Brandon Knight should have been an all-star. No disrespect to current Buck Kyle Korver or anything like that. But do you remember like the vibe of the team when that trade happened? I mean, it had to be a little bit difficult considering how important he was to the first half of the season.
I do remember. I think the last person anybody expected to get traded was Brandon Knight. I think that, you know, like you said, he was playing well. I think he should have been an all-star as well. And I think that, and to be honest, you know, we had just finished practice and everybody was on their phones. And I just remember Brandon just coming to the locker room, you know, in tears, man. And we already kind of knew that, you know, he had been shipped away. So I think that it was definitely heartbreaking, man. But I think we ended up getting some solid pieces in return and made a little push.
Do you think it's sort of like that trade you said, it kind of like affected the locker room a little bit? Did that like carry over for the rest of the season? Like just like having Brandon Knight be traded away from that team? You said he was in tears. The locker room was a little shaken. Did that carry over?
You know what? I don't really think so. I think that the main thing was just, you know, we were playing so well. And I think that, when we got MCW and Tyler and Miles, I think that we kind of had to like start over, because Brandon was he was, you know, leading the team in scoring. You know, I think he was averaging almost 20 points a game. I don't quite remember, but you know, but I think it was a blessing in disguise, because that was the rise of like Chris Middleton. And that's when he started to become Chris, and you know, his talent started to show, and he really stepped up and carried the team. So I think, you know, it kind of hurt us a little bit, but other guys stepped up and did well.
Absolutely. That's a great point. I mean, it's been fascinating as someone obviously watching the Bucks this whole time to see all these incremental steps for Chris Middleton, you know, coming over as a guy who played in the G League, then the NBA his rookie year, then he gets an expanded role in this trade, then with Malcolm Brogdon leaving this last season, he gets even more of a role. But from your rookie season there with a younger Chris Middleton who certainly wasn't as proven, you know, did you know he could be as good as he is right now back then?
You know what? I think so, man, because I just remember when he really started to show his talent, I was really impressed, because he really had a lot to his game. He had free ball, he could post. You know, I was really fascinated by his post footwork, you know, being such a big guard. He had the three ball, you know, he didn't get rattled. He made tough shots. He would defend, you know, he would guard, you know, and this before Giannis was becoming Giannis, you know, he would guard LeBron and he would guard, you know, all these tough matchups. So he was definitely a two-way kind of player. And I, you know, at the time I was like, you know, Chris could, his potential could keep going. And obviously he's an all-star now. It speaks for itself. So
you hinted at there a little bit, like Giannis wasn't really Giannis. I guess we could ask the same question about Giannis, like that we just did for Chris. Like, what was he like back in those seasons? Like, did you think he could be like a league MVP? Cause it's, you were sort of on the team when this, when these two now faces of the franchise, like they weren't really that prominent or even getting great minutes.
I think with Giannis, man, like I had no clue what he would become. I knew that the coaching staff had like ultimate belief in him, but I also knew that Giannis was probably the hardest working basketball player I've ever like seen in my life at the time. I think that he was in the gym every day, twice a day. You know, he could play 40 minutes and he would go back at night. Like it was really crazy, man. And I knew that he would eventually become a good player. I didn't think that he would be he would become like back-to-back MVP, you know, on his way to winning back-to-back MVPs and the Bucks being the best team in the league, you know. But I did think, you know, if he kept working the way he would, you know, he would be special. So
definitely. So we'll just hop back just to the general, you know, that Bucks team, those 2 years you were around, obviously, you know, Jason Kidd, the coach at that time, what was it like playing for him? He is, I would say, divisive. I mean, Bucks fans, I think, generally do not have a positive memory of Jason Kidd. A lot of people around the league think he's a very good coach. Obviously, now he's with the Lakers. But what was it like playing for Jason Kidd? What sticks out to you from those days?
You know what? I think the one thing J. Kidd did, you know, no matter what people say, you know, or no matter my relationship with him, I just think that when he got to Milwaukee, man, he instilled a winning culture. You know, I think like he held the rookies accountable. Like he bring like tradition there. And I think that now, like you see it, you know, like I think he instilled in Giannis and Chris like to be leaders. And when I was there, like he would really challenge Chris. He would call him out in practice. He would challenge Giannis. And, you know, he would make, you know, challenge Jabari. And I think that, you know, more than anything, he brought tradition and culture that the Bucks didn't have at the time. And he laid that foundation. And I think that it's really like showing now.
Okay, that's, you know, that's really interesting. It's sort of like easy to point out that the coaching staff change sort of propelled like this team from like, you know, a lower playoff team to like, you know, top of the league, like you were saying. So a lot of people sort of like, you get the, it's easy to assign blame to Jason Kidd compared to like, you know, just being a young team. And I don't think it's divisive to say that like any coach, he has his faults. But they were a little, at least in the eyes of Bucks fans, they were a little like, you know, bigger than bigger than his worth, I guess you could say. But you know, I guess it worked out for everyone because, you know, Bucks have Budenholzer now and then Jason Kidd, he's on the Lakers. So I guess it works out. But you know, circling back to that 14-15 season, it was a magical season because it ended in a playoff run for the Milwaukee Bucks. And even though it wasn't like anything super new to the fans, the franchise, they were coming off, what was that, like a 15-win season the season before. Then they make the playoffs. And you ended up actually playing a decent amount of minutes in that last playoff game of the year. But unfortunately, it's mostly known for the game where Giannis took out Mike Dunleavy. But just in general, what do you remember about that game?
I just remember it was, you know, a bad loss, and I think it's a blowout. And I think for me personally, I just remember getting my first ever playoff minutes and just trying to play really hard and you know, just, you know, score as many points as I could and just, you know, be productive in the time I had. So I took away from it. It was just my first time checking in the playoffs and, you know, just being able to, you know, say I played in a playoff game.
Absolutely. And I think that's the thing that, you know, I wrote about it at the time, and it's always what I'll remember about, you know, those two seasons that you spent with the Bucks. It always seemed like you played really hard. You really tried to make the right plays. You weren't going out there, you know, taking 15 shots a game or whatever, because there were so many other good players on that team. It really did seem like you filled in a role very, very well and just gave that maximum effort. And I just think, Do you feel like that's was that what you were aiming to do in your minutes in that first season, especially in those first 2 years?
To be honest, man, my time with the Bucks, man, it's funny because coming out of college, man, I was a like face up five, man. Like I had, I had back to the basket, really good footwork. I can make fadeaways. I can make mid range. I took a couple threes in college, and when I got to the Bucks, the league was changing really fast, and so when I got to the Bucks, I figured I could, be, I always tried to pattern my game after David West early in my career. That, that's who I looked up to, and so when I got to the Bucks, I had to play a lot of four, and at the time, I was behind Giannis and Jabari, and Giannis was a four at this time. He wasn't the primary ball handler. So those two guys were really, really already good at being wing players. Like they could shoot, they could dribble, they could make plays. And so for me, when I got put in a position to play the four, I couldn't really I was a five, and I didn't really have time to develop because when you're on the team and you're trying to win, you got to kind of really help. So for me, the way I could help was just playing good defense, rebounding, communicating, and making my mid-range shots and free throws. So for me, it was a weird situation because, I was trying to develop, but at the same time, I had to go out and concentrate on my habits and what I could do at the time to help the team. So, those first 2 years was a little weird and awkward, but, for me, I just tried to play hard and do what's right. And I think today, man, I'm so much of a better player. So it's pretty, pretty cool.
We will get right back to the Johnny O'Brien interview here on the Eurostep in just a second. But first, a quick word from our sponsor, betonline.ag. With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think that there's nothing to bet on, but you would be wrong. Our exclusive partner here at Blue Wire, betonline.ag, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on. From their online casino to poker and blackjack, they're bringing Vegas right to you. Missing the NFL? No problem. BetOnline.ag has live daily Madden NFL 20 sims that you can bet on. You can also still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. It's all open 24 hours a day, and it's all completely online. Use promo code BLUEWIRE to join today and receive your new welcome bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online wagering solution.
Just, I guess, moving on from that 14-15 season, it ended up sort of being like a little bit of a disappointment in 15-16 because, the team was coming off that magical 14-15 run, and then they signed, at the time, one of the biggest free agents in Greg Monroe, but something, it just didn't click. What do you think is the reason that that team sort of stumbled and did not, and they ended up missing the playoffs?
I think honestly, man, I just think guys were not happy. I think, I don't think, I just think guys weren't happy, man. I think MCW, he wasn't really happy. I think the bench guys weren't happy. I don't think, Greg Monroe was happy, even though he just got paid. I just think there was a lot of, unhappy guys on that roster, Rashad Vaughn. So I just that's what I would chalk it up to. I just really think it was just a group of unhappy guys, and we kind of underachieved. So.
Is there any particular reason?
Do you think losing all those vets that were so great in the previous year? I mean, I think Dudley, Ersan, and Zaza all were let go between those two seasons. Do you think that played into it at all?
For sure. I think. Definitely, because those guys are so selfless, right? Like, Ersan can start 14 games and then not play 14 games. He, every time he gets in, he's going to be Ersan. Zaza the same way. So, but I think when you take that away and you go younger, with younger guys, who Greg Monroe was young at the time too, I just think that we kind of went a lot younger and, you know, anytime a younger guy doesn't get what he wants, you know, he kind of becomes, you know, a rebel or resistant. And I think, you know, that's kind of what happens. Guys are just unhappy with their roles or, you know, situation, and, you know, it led to a disappointing season.
Following that season, you know, you spent a little bit of time in Denver and then in Charlotte. You know, why do you think it didn't work out with the Bucks after that year? And how tough was it to kind of, you know, carve out a new role on these teams after not getting that many minutes to really, you know, show the rest of the league what you could do in the first 2 years?
I think the Bucks, man, I just think, you know, they really wanted a stretch four. And I think that, I think Thun at the time, that maybe that's who they drafted, but I think that, you know, I for whatever reason, you know, I really didn't develop how they wanted it to. And I totally understand, because like I said, I had to really, you know, I was stuck into a role where you look at most second round picks, they spend time in the D League, they get to work on their game, they get to really, for me, you know, I had to play immediate minutes. So I had to, you know, I couldn't come out and, if I never shot a three, NBA three, I couldn't, you know, definitely couldn't work on it at that point. So I think they just wanted to move on to a more, you know, I guess a more polished talent. And I think for me, man, it was a blessing in disguise. I think it's one of the best things that ever happened to me, because I was able to go to the G League, develop, have a really good G League year, and be done with the G League in 3 months, get called up by Denver. Didn't really play a lot. And then I went to Charlotte, played really well, and I was there for, you know, 2 years, so a year and a half. So I think it was definitely something that helped me.
Yeah, you've like after that, you've had like a successful, you've still had a successful playing career, like highlighted by, like, you know, you became a league champion in Israel. Like, how have your stops been outside of the NBA?
It's been really good, man. I think I've been one of the best bigs in Europe. I think this year I shot, you know, 40% from three on 5 threes a game. So it's been incredible, man. Like, I've really developed into the player that I want to be. I think becoming a, you know, stretch four and just really like showcasing my talent, man. I think and I'm in a much, you know, much better spirits, man. Just you know, being a player that I want to be, and overseas has been really fun for myself and my family. The experience has been great.
No, that's awesome. I mean, you hear sometimes about, you know, players struggling to, you know, accommodate to the overseas circumstances. I think it's terrific you got to bring the family out there. I feel like the next logical question then, you know, you're feeling better about your game than ever. Are you eyeing a potential return to the NBA, or still kind of keeping the options open? Obviously, you have a business venture as well we're going to get to in just a second here, but.
I'm definitely always, you know, definitely would always want to return to the NBA. But for me, man, I think I want to return when the situation is right. You know, I think for most of my NBA career, and kind of sit at the end of the bench. So I think in Europe, man, where, you know, where I could be a, you know, premier player and be a primary player in this high level basketball, a lot of NBA guys are in Europe now. So I think for me, you know, I want to return to the NBA when my value is high and the time is right. You know, until then, you know, myself and my family, you know, we've been enjoying, you know, how things are. So.
Yeah, what's not to enjoy? You've had, you know, you're having a successful career in, you know, a premier role. And you're still really young. You're not even 27. So it's, you've got nothing but, you know, good things going ahead of you in your playing career.
Definitely.
All right. So we alluded to it earlier. You're currently the CEO of Noir Caesar. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly. That's an anime and manga publishing company. I hadn't really heard about this as much. I've been doing some research. It seems very, very cool. I'm excited about it. But in your words, could you describe the mission of this and why it's important to you?
So for me, man, I grew up a huge, like, anime comic book animation fan. And, the one thing I just always noticed, you know, there wouldn't be a lot of, you know, black characters or African-American characters, just characters of color in general. You know, I noticed there would be like cats, dogs, you know, talking octopus or fish, but like, you know, never a black character. So for me, I wanted to start something that people like myself who enjoy this form of ourselves reflected in his art. And when I started, honestly, man, like, it was just something that, like,
you know, I just kind of wanted to do as a hobby. And it really took off, man, to be honest. We have a ton of books. We have animation out. It's we have an office in Charlotte. So it's doing really well, man. Like, it's really big. And, you know, whatever time I'm not spending with my family or playing football, like, that definitely takes a lot of time. So I'm definitely proud of that.
No, it's something obviously you should be proud of. I relate to, like, the inclusivity sort of aspect of things. It's beautiful to see when, you know, you can have characters that you can relate to, and, you know, you and this company, you're sort of bringing that to so many young people and people just in general across the globe. So I commend you for that. That's just, it's a beautiful venture.
Definitely. Thank you.
So, you know, what you said, you started it up, you weren't really planning on making it, you know, such like official or established business. Can you talk about, you know, how this did come to be? You know, when did this go from an idea to something you were working on to becoming, you know, this now full-fledged company with that's making, producing content?
It started when, like, we created our first book called Primus 7, and then we had, like, some animation done for it, and we released them together online. And when it released, it just kind of went crazy, like, you know, a ton of followers and a ton of comments and a ton of views. And people just start following North Caesar Instagram page rapidly. And I was just shocked. I was like, wow, like, I didn't really, like, I knew, you know, I was one of few that I knew that liked anime and manga. You know, people wasn't so open about it. And then it just started growing. And so me and my business partner was like, you know, well, what if we created a bunch of books and keep pushing? And so we just kept adding things and testing the waters and eventually, man, it became what it is now. So
I think that's so cool. I mean, there's more talk than ever, I feel like, about, you know, professional basketball players having, you know, a post pro career or something else to do. I know Pat Connaughton on the Bucks now is really open and vocal about players. In his case, it's real estate, like finding something else to do, whether it's a work stoppage like this pandemic or just, you know, that post-retirement thing. And it really seems like you've kind of already found yours. I mean, is this something that you would look at doing full-time when you are done playing professionally?
Oh, yeah, most definitely, man. I've been setting that up. And I think for me, man, like, I never wanted to coach, you know, I never wanted to, you know, I wanted to give as much as I can to the game and be done with it. And obviously I have kids, you know, I will get back into it for them. But for me, man, I just kind of wanted to lean into something else I love. And that's anime and manga. And I actually want to be a filmmaker as well when I'm done. I just think I just love telling stories and really, I want to really, you know, be able to do it from a directing and filmmaking standpoint. So
are you talking films in like the same sort of style or just films in general? What are you talking here?
I think films in general. I think you know, I just finished two documentaries that I helped direct and put together, which are pretty cool. Be dropping them soon. But yeah, so I really want to like get into filmmaking, man, and creating cool stories and content. So
wow, no, that's great energy. I love that you're already getting into it. You know, for a listener now who's maybe heard about this idea and is interested, you know, where would they go to find either the Noir Caesar content or these documentaries that you just mentioned?
So you can just literally go to northcaesar.com, man, and check out the content. You know, we have an app in development now that people can view everything from their phone here in a little while, but. You know, for now, you can just go to northcaesar.com, check it out. You can buy the books. You know, we got cool little videos and animation you could check out. So, yeah, for now, you know, I think you can check everything out there.
No, that's so cool. So then last year, I feel like I have to ask, you know, as the Bucks podcaster, one of the Bucks podcasters in the room, you know, if you were considering that comeback and the right role and everything came along, would you sign back with the Milwaukee Bucks?
I definitely would, man. It's, you know, Milwaukee, man, it's weird. Like, it holds such a special place in my heart just because, you know, they get the opportunity to be an NBA player. And I think, you know, I was a part of, like, the foundation of that. And, you know, to see, like, I don't even think Bucks fans would have thought Milwaukee would be the best team in the NBA when I was playing, you know. So, but I think that, you know, I would love to contribute to what those guys have going on now. Seems like an incredible team, an incredible group of guys. And, you know, if that opportunity ever comes, sure, I'd definitely, you know, take them up on that offer.
No, I definitely think the foundational thing of what you mentioned was very accurate, because, like, as I mentioned at the top, this that run, like 14, 15, 15, 16, that holds such a special place in the hearts of Bucks fans everywhere, because it jump-started this new era. You know, there's the new ownership, and then you got the deal for the new arena, and then you build from there, you get your playoff experience. Everything just sort of came from those seasons, and, you know, you being a part of it, you're like, that's why most, you know, you're well discussed amongst the most of Bucks fans, because you were part of those teams. I speak for most of Bucks fans when I say that those teams will always hold a special place in our hearts.
No, I appreciate you guys, man. Like I said, and any Bucks fans who who went out and bought a JLB jersey, it's weird because, like, I used to see like a few 77 jerseys in the crowd, man. That would be, and I would think it was a joke. You know, I'm like, man, like, why you want a JLB jersey? But either way, man, I appreciate anybody who supported me, you know, during my time in Milwaukee. So,
absolutely, as the proud owner of one of those jerseys, I just definitely was not a joke. It was just sort of like, you know, like I said earlier, it just felt like, you know, you brought it all when you were out there, even if it wasn't the ideal situation. I thought you played the right way. That mid-range jumper was underrated. I'm glad you mentioned that. I thought that was people slept a little bit on the mid-range that you were bringing back then. I can't wait to see the long-range development now that you got. But no, that is terrific. But I think I'm all out of questions, unless you had anything else, Rohan.
No, I think we're good here. I guess, is there any specific thing, you know, besides like Norris Caesar that you wanted to shout out?
Not really, man. I think, you know, like I said, man, I'm always thankful for Milwaukee, the opportunity, the fans, the city, man, and just always know that, you know, they have a special place in my heart. So that's pretty much it.
Okay, well, thank you once again for being on this episode of the Eurostep. If all of you listening out there enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. Make sure you follow everything related to Johnny O'Brien here, everything related to North Caesar. Check out all the great content that's being put out there, because it is fantastic. I've checked it. It's really great stuff. Just make sure you tell your family and friends about this podcast. Make sure you check out all of the content across the Blue Wire Podcast Network. And all I have to say now, please stay safe out there, and we will talk to you next time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.